Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
I believe united we stand, and we have common ground to find, and we're going to find it.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And this is Rewind for a very busy week in the Capitol, a week that ended with an important federal judge's ruling, but we'll get to that later in Rewind. First, was I was there. The first segment is Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald said, we have got Governor Evers to agree to not abolish Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation in this budget. He will soon submit. Was I was there.
I asked specifically about WEDC. And it sounded like, to me, the way I characterized it to the governor was to say it sounded like he had been moving away from his campaign pledge to undo the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation and instead allow it to remain in place. And he made the commitment that he would not touch WEDC in this budget.
The caucuses impress upon us how important WEDC is, and my plea to them is let's... You know, they have members on that board. They need to be proactive as it relates to what to expect as far as scrutiny.
Talk to me about the unsustainable out-of-home care costs.
We have no release valve. We have nothing. We are capped or limited in terms of property taxes, and we have very few places to go for revenue. So when this challenge affects a county, something else is going to give. Whether it's the transportation budget in the county or the tourism budget or some other area, something else is going to give, because this is an area where we don't really have the moral option to not engage.
About 40, almost 45% of children now are born to unmarried parents. If you look at kids born to women under 30, it's upwards of 50%. In the U.S., these parents tend to break up very quickly, and parents who were unmarried at the time of a birth are highly likely to repartner and have new children. For the most part, what happens is that children in complicated families tend to get lesser investments than children in what we think of as the traditional nuclear family.
The priorities of the Republican legislature over the last 8 years do not reflect the priorities of the public. As a result, people have become increasingly cynical about politics and government, and poll after poll that we take shows that politicians do not care about people like them. It doesn't have to be this way. That's why Democrats are prioritizing measures that restore how democracy is supposed to work.
We are taking the surplus that was developed over the course of the past 8 years under Republicans, a sizable surplus, as has been reported, almost $600 million that we have been able to save, and we are going to use that surplus to pay for Tony Evers' middle-class tax cut.
Jared, one of the biggest issues this week was the dispute over expanding Medicaid with federal cash. The governor says, my budget would expand Medicaid to about 75,000 middle-income residents. He said GOP legislators from rural areas may, quote, change their minds after they hear from health care providers and constituents. But we had a very unusual meeting. The governor talked to a joint caucus of Republican legislators, and he also talked to Democrats. Mm-hmm. And after the GOP caucus, which is pretty interesting, both Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald and Assembly Speaker Voss, said it's a non-starter.
Yes.
Big deal.
Yes,
biggest potential dispute in the budget? Excuse me.
Possibly, but we knew these lines were already drawn before. I mean, Evers has been talking, and other Democrats, for a while about taking the expansion money under the Affordable Care Act, and Republicans have said no. And remember, Scott Walker pointedly rejected the Obamacare money, was it 4, 5, 6 years ago now, whatever it was, and so they're going to do a different way. Republicans went along. They hitched their wagon to him and his path. They expanded Medicaid to the poorest citizens in Wisconsin to cover everybody.
Everybody below the federal poverty level.
And I take the federal money. Going back, if you're a Republican, means you're admitting that you guys did it the wrong way with Walker. So that's going to be a tough sell with them. What Evers seems to be getting at is that he's going to try and pressure them publicly with people back home, that healthcare providers will see the opportunity for more money, increase reimbursement rates would come along with that, that they would then pressure these guys to go along. But as long as Voss and Fitzgerald stay dug in, I'm not quite sure how they get there.
Okay, but can't the Wisconsin Hospital Association provide numbers for every hospital, urban and rural, potential uppers if we did expand Medicaid?
Absolutely. But again, you've got to get leadership to say, yeah, we made a mistake 6 years ago, whatever it was, and we're going to flip reverse course here. I don't know they want to do that just yet. So that's going to be a holdup. And they've talked about this for several years, that if you take that money, you run the risk of it running out eventually. Mm-hmm. By the way, the Affordable Care Act was ruled unconstitutional by a federal judge in Texas. That was on hold, so there's some uncertainty about what's going on with that. So there are all kinds of things you can point to and say, hey, there might be something concerns about doing this. At the same time, it's politically popular. We've seen polls that show people want to accept the federal money, and Evers thinks he has a winning issue to hit them with.
Well, before we hear from Speaker Voss and Governor Evers, Mr. Voss said Mr. Evers shouldn't pick things that have no chance of passing just to score political points. governors include in their budget messages their priorities.
Yeah,
well,
absolutely.
That's a...
I don't think that... Governor's going to heed that advice from Speaker Voss. How
he
about
has said
that?
Not. Okay. Now let's listen to a short segment. It's about 30 seconds. Speaker Voss and the governor on the expansion of Medicaid.
Now, he said, look, he strongly believes in more people on government health care, and that he probably does want to raise some taxes. I certainly, hope we can convince him not to.
I believe our position at the end of the day is a correct one. I think if Republican legislators who come from small-town Wisconsin that understand that the success of those small-town hospitals and clinics depend upon having access to greater resources, they may change their minds.
Another source of potential disagreements here is the bill on pre-existing conditions. Mm-hmm. Now, there were so many maneuvers on this. The Assembly Health Committee held a hearing, voted it out, Republicans plus two Democrats. It came out yesterday.
On the floor Tuesday.
On the floor Tuesday before the State of the State speech. Mm-hmm. But the governor has serious questions, and he said, I want to be sure that the bill prevents annual or lifetime limits on coverage. Now, but then you had this, I think it was late Wednesday night, Mr. Fitzgerald, Mr. Voss said, hey, can we talk about this? They don't have a compromise on this, do they?
Not last time I checked. And what's interesting is both parties want to find a way to address the pre-existing conditions issue, in part because this became a major campaign issue, right? I mean, we saw it up and down the ballot, not just in Wisconsin, but nationally. Evers ran against the lawsuit that was filed by former AG Brad Schimmel with Scott Walker's blessing to challenge the Affordable Care Act. New AG Call made that a main plank of his campaign, saying he'd undo that lawsuit. Then Republicans changed the law on them that made that more difficult. But this is an issue that has been percolating for a while. They want to address it. The problem is they can't quite get on the same page about how to address it. Mm-hmm. Democrats, there was a bill on the floor of the Senate last month in that lame duck session that would have provided state protections. Those are prison conditions. But remember, Democrats all voted against it, saying that there's no caps on lifetime or annual cost. They had a concern. They called it meaningless.
Right.
Even the Dems who voted for it in committee raised concerns about that piece of the bill. And so they hoped that they'd find a compromise. And last time I checked, Evers and GOP leaders were still trying to figure something out. So they passed the bill as is. Evers is not going to sign it, for all the indications right now.
So, but given the uncertainty, are we for sure that the Assembly is going to pass this bill Tuesday?
That's the only thing that's planned to be on their calendar right now.
So it's on track to pass on Tuesday.
The email from Jim Steinke, the majority leader, about the plan was to come in to take up directly refer this bill, AB1, a symbolic designation, so it's a priority. AB1 will go right to the floor. They're also going to amend the joint resolution on the calendar to give Governor Evers more time to deliver his budget address. But this is the first bill for a reason. They want to send a message that it's important.
Well, but they may have agreement on an assembly bill on pre-existing conditions, but this constitutional amendment on Marcy's Law to give victims new rights, that's not going to get voted on.
Well, Jim Steinke, again, raised some concerns about having new members look at that.
Yep.
But I asked Speaker Voss's office and was told that discussion is ongoing. So they're,
okay, so that's
I wouldn't close
the
door on that just yet.
Okay, but they have got to put it on the April ballot. They've got to act on it.
Both houses by Tuesday.
Tuesday. Okay, new subject. Last week, both Assembly Democrats and Republicans announced their top priorities. Mm-hmm. Let's focus first. It's a very complex list, but let's focus first on what the Republicans said. We want a tax cut, and oh yeah, it's $340 million, which is the same amount of the tax cut proposed by Governor Evers in the campaign. The tax cut of Republicans, Assembly Republicans, would target families with adjusted gross incomes of $150,000 or less, individuals of $100,000or less. The median income family would save $310, a 10.6% cut. So here's my question before we get to the Democrats. You now have, okay, and Senate Republicans said, we kind of like the Assembly Republican tax cut. They agree on the amount. They agree on target, who would, which families would benefit, but they can't agree on how to pay for it?
Absolutely. Governor Evers during the campaign, when he was being hit with these these charges that he was going to raise taxes, said actually he wants to create a 10% tax cut for the middle class. Now, didn't detail exactly how he would do it, but what they talked about was we have a thing called the Manufacturing Agricultural Tax Credit for manufacturers and farmers. He wants to cap that credit at the first $300,000 of income, which they say would still, I think, make three-fourths or more of the people who use it now eligible. But cap that, it would then generate enough money to offset most of his 10% tax cut.
Most of it, yes.
Republicans, however, are talking about using the projected surplus from the end of this fiscal year to then pay for this tax cut. Now, there are a couple problems or issues with both these approaches. One, with Evers, he is raising a tax to cut a tax. Republicans don't like that approach. With Republicans, they're taking this money, the surplus, which is projected revenue, taking that to pay for the tax cut, which would be permanent. The surplus is not. So what happens 2 years after that? You have that built in now to our government costs. You have to cover that before you can pay for schools, Medicaid,
corrections,
et cetera.
UW system, K-12.
And Evers, his office of that proposal falls short because it's using one-time money to pay for an ongoing obligation.
Were you surprised that Assembly Republicans targeted our surplus? The conservative Assembly Republican leaders targeted a surplus to draw it down, cut it down by potentially more than half?
No.
To pay for their tax cut?
No, because they want to send a message that this is the Republican surplus, as they call it, and they want to send it back to taxpayers. So I'm not surprised by that.
Kind of like the $100 per child that the governor signed off on?
Absolutely.
Before
go back
the election?
2014, they did withholding tables and put a bunch of money into tech colleges, the property tax levy to drive down property taxes. They've been doing this when this money comes in. So now the other thing is, if you take that money off the table for this two-year period, you also get off the table for Governor Evers to pay for his schools proposal.
Yes.
It's $1.4 billion. Now, the Assembly GOP approach is to put this in a standalone bill, not in the budget.
The tax cut bill would move separately from the budget.
Yep.
Excuse me.
So that would kind of go that way. Evers, we haven't seen yet, has the details of his proposal, but I'm going to guess it'd be in his budget.
Okay, now let's talk about the Assembly Democratic priorities. Let's go through three of them. A nonpartisan panel would draw and then forward to lawmakers new legislative districts. They want to repeal the complete rewrite of campaign finance laws that the Republicans enacted probably 3 or 4 years ago. They want to eliminate some of the synergy between some of these third-party groups and candidates, and they want a constitutional amendment to prohibit laws enacted by lame duck sessions. Anything surprise you on the Assembly Democrats' wish list?
No, they're all things trying to poke at Republicans and how they've done things the last few years.
How come they didn't list, we support Governor Evers' middle-class tax cut?
I don't know. I don't know if that was even part of the conversation ahead of time. But they're trying to get at a good government approach, that they're putting this into, that these Republicans are out for themselves, that they're, lawmakers shouldn't pick their voters, voters should pick their lawmakers, that kind of thing. So this stuff they've talked about for a while. Now, like gerrymandering, that's been something that's been talked about a bit. The Democratic base is very into that. I don't know if you put it in the pecking order of what's most important to people in general, where it fits in, but they're trying to drive a theme of Republican lawmakers have rigged the system against you. That's why they're still in power. We need to change this.
Okay, now, new subject. Your shop was politics. Sent somebody to Mr. Evers at the Technology Council. So let's listen to about 30 seconds of what the governor said on new subject, medical marijuana.
at the end of the day, do I favor legalization? Yes. I want it to be done correctly. So we will likely have in our budget a first step around medical marijuana, and either A, find another step for legalization, or call for a statewide referendum. I personally would sign that bill. I want to make sure that we do it correctly.
All my candidate interviews before the election, I asked about both medical marijuana and recreational marijuana. There was support, but there was no groundswell. Now you have the governor saying, I'm going to take the first step mm-hmm. towards medical marijuana by indeed putting it in the budget, making legislators either discard it or take it up.
Yeah.
Were you surprised, as I was, that the governor upped the ante on this issue this week?
Well, that's the thing that's why our ears perked up when we heard him talk about this, because during the campaign, he said he supported medical marijuana. He said that he would basically sign a bill to legalize recreational use if it came to him. This was the first sign of him actually taking a step toward it by putting his budget. Now, in interviewing Governor Evers before, he's talked about a first step toward prison reform in his budget. He hasn't said what that means. So we're not sure the details. He hasn't put out what the details are. But this definitely ups the ante about where the discussion is going to go. At the same time, you know, Speaker Robin Voss has said that he's open to it in the context of we have an opioid problem in Wisconsin. If there's an alternative to prescribing an opioid and this is it, he'd at least look at it. Scott Fitzgerald, however, Senate Majority Leader said no way. He's just not interested, doesn't think he's not there in his caucuses. So the Republicans controlling both House and legislature, I don't know that they get there anytime soon. But this debate is coming, and it's happening in other states. I think Michigan has full legalization after a voter-driven referendum. So there are people around us who are doing this.
Jer, I want to talk about the referendums, the mechanics. He couldn't put it on. This legislature will not put any advisory referendum on recreational marijuana on the April ballot. We do not have November. So potentially the earliest, if the governor recommends and legislators agree to an advisory referendum on recreational marijuana, which travels separately than medical marijuana, mm-hmm. I don't see it before next year.
2020, yeah, there's not really an opportunity to do it. We have seen signs. There were 16 counties and 2 municipalities that had referendum this past fall, either on medical or recreational marijuana. Mm-hmm. All of them passed, largely, I think, overwhelmingly. I think I saw one stat that those counties represent more than half of the state's population. Still, it's a big step going from that to like how this would work and getting lawmakers on board, especially Republican lawmakers on board, because there are some concerns there, and they run both houses.
Okay, and after any governor, Republican or Democrat, submits a budget, the Legislative Fiscal Bureau makes a list of non-spending items mm-hmm. that legislators then decide, oh, we can easily say this doesn't deal with the fiscal budget, the cash operation of state government. We're going to deal with these separately. That could be shuttled out, diverted.
Yes. As we have learned, policy is in the eye of the beholder when
yes.
it comes to the budget process. So what LFB recommends is not always what lawmakers take out. Plus, they can bring it back in at the end. We've been through plenty of 999 motions that kind of come grab-alls for everything. But, yeah, I mean, I'll be interested to watch this debate, how it really plays out, and if there's a groundswell of support for doing something like this.
Yeah, good point. Okay, Planned Parenthood sued this week over mm-hmm. a 2012 law that required abortions to be performed by physicians, required women to meet with the same physician a second time to obtain bills that induce an abortion, banned telemedicine abortions in which women take abortion-inducing drugs under the internet supervision of a doctor. This bill passed in 2012. Mm-hmm. Timing of the lawsuit, the week after, 2 pro-choice Democrats, mm-hmm. Governor Evers and Attorney General Call, took office. Timing significant?
Possibly. The thing that I'm watching is how does Josh Call approach this? Because this has been the kind of rub with Republicans about, well, is this new AG going to defend these GOP-authored laws while he's Attorney General? What is Call going to do? I mean, that'll be an interesting early first test of his approach to something. I don't know how he personally feels about the law or where he's at in his mind legally about it. But how does he approach this? That's something to really watch closely, because it could be a predictor of things that come with other GOP-authored laws.
Okay, and one of the options, and neither you nor I know how the Attorney General is going to react, but one of his options says, I can choose not to defend this law, mm-hmm. correct?
Yes, absolutely.
That's one of the things. A week ago, a court-appointed monitor criticized the ongoing conduct of the interaction between guards and juveniles in our state's prisons at Lincoln Hills, reporting guards are still relying on pepper spray, lengthy solitary confinements, and in other words, at variance with some of the court order changes. Mm-hmm. Now, Lincoln Hills, we have talked about this state government has talked about Lincoln Hills for more than 3 years.
Yeah.
We still have no federal investigation. The spokesman for the governor, Melissa Baldoff, said the governor knows changes are needed to improve health safety at juvenile prisons. How do you see this playing out? Because this legislature and this governor have to decide, are we going to close these two and set up the regional juvenile facilities?
On Upfront Mike, you shared this month, Michael Schrah, who's chair of the corrections committee in the assembly, and Evan Goyke, who's one of the kind of Democrats who participated in this.
And he just made joint finance.
Mm-hmm. Both of them were talking about this, the prison guard shortage that we have in Wisconsin, which, you know, we have a huge spike in overtime, but as well, the juvenile prison situation, talked about maybe needing more time, maybe more money. Because remember, we're going from Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake to, like, I think it's five regional facilities, not yet constructed as far as I know. That process has to be figured out. Converting Lincoln Hills to a medium security, I believe,
yes,
alcohol and drug type facility. There's a lot of stuff that has to happen to make that work. I guess what I'm watching is, how does this process change with a Democratic administration? Evers visited Lincoln Hills, I believe, Friday after he was inaugurated. Yep.
A week ago.
Mandela Barnes. So there's some symbolism there. I think there's more work to be done about this issue before we have the path forward.
Okay, let's go to your stock reports. Rising.
So, this week we saw the final fundraising report from 2018. Former Governor Walker, raised just shy of $20 million. Governor Evers raised just shy of $11 million. So we weren't surprised he outraised him by $9 million. But I got curious, Steve, and I went back to January 1st of 2009, which was right before Walker formally announced he's going to run for the 2010 race, December 31st of 2018. In that span, Scott Walker raised $117.9
million. $117.9
million. Million.
To win office the first time, mm-hmm. to survive the recall, to win a second term, mm-hmm. and in his losing campaign for a third term. $117 million.
Now, to put that in some perspective, Jim Doyle, between 99, which, you know, was the cycle ahead of his 2002 win, and 2000, end of 2010, he raised like $19 million. Now, I don't have, like, you know, inflation, those kinds of things. But what's remarkable about Walker's fundraising is that I don't know that anybody ever had the chance, the opportunity to raise that money like that again. And this is why. Scott Walker built a national profile because of the recall election. Now, he had a couple of things that went for him. One, during the recall process, he had unlimited ability to take unlimited campaign contributions. So that helped a great deal. But two, it created a national network of people, of donors, to give him money. Most governors don't have that. I don't know, and, you know, we'll see what Governor Evers does, but they just don't have that opportunity because they don't become national figures. Walker did because of the recall. It built this network. He then was able to raise this money, oh, by the way, for his presidential bid.
Well, I was going to ask you, does $117 million include, it doesn't include?
According to Center for Responsive Politics, between his campaign and the outside groups is $33 million in change.
117 plus 33. Go ahead. You know where I'm going.
Don't forget the
$150 million.
What I haven't tallied up is the RGA. He was chair of the RGA for a year, how mm-hmm. much they raised while he was chair. We'll maybe never see a fundraiser like this again. Now, let's not forget Paul Ryan, for example, raised very impressive amounts of money as House Speaker, but it's for the cause, the caucus. Tammy Baldwin did $30 million in 6 years, and what's impressive about that is she did it in chunks of $2,700 at a time, so max $5,400 per individual donor. Walker benefited from this real campaign finance laws as well because the GOP, for example, sent him three transfers of more than $1 million each in October of last year. So that helped, but still, just the opportunity, the network that he built, it was going to be unrivaled for a Canford State office in Wisconsin, maybe ever again.
And a footnote is, according to your reporting, when I read your reports, on January 1, he had $62,000.
So he's a prolific fundraiser and a prodigious spender at
yes.
the same time.
Okay. Next.
Bipartisanship. So we talked about kind of these issues a little bit. The tax cut they're talking about, pre-existing conditions, what we're seeing are signs of there's some common ground about what they want to get done, but they're not on the same page when it comes to how to do it. There's also these issues like Medicaid expansion, where they're not in the same chapter even. Mm-hmm. What I'm watching is, how is this going to play out? There was this kind of sense among some that, you know, Speaker Robin Voss was going to try and roll Tony Evers. You know, Tony Evers is this new guy on the scene. He'd been DPI superintendent, but hadn't been governor. Would Evers be able to hold his own with somebody like Voss, who's been around for a long time, you know, knows how to pull the strings? And so far, I get the impression people, Evers is holding his own. Now, what's going to happen going forward? What's this budget going to look like? And more importantly, what can they get done? The debate I still hear from people about this budget is, will Evers write something that Republicans rework and send back to him quickly, and then Evers either vetoes the entire thing or partially vetoes it? You know, what's going to happen with that? Or could this drag out for a very long time? The Republicans try and see, okay, what can we do to try and box in Tony Evers?
And let's talk about the timing of the budget. The Speaker Voss said that they're willing to give Governor Evers until late in February or early March to submit his budget. Do we have a more precise date?
Evers sent a letter to the chief clerks last week asking for March 5th. He pointed out in that letter that Governor Walker also got the first Tuesday in March for his first budget. Now, that was also in the middle of the Act 10 protest, which is part of why it was delayed. Traditionally, so I found this out this week, under state law, a governor must deliver the budget by the fourth Tuesday in January. But lawmakers almost always give an extension. It's almost always in mid-February
sometime.
The courtesy
extension, especially when you're a new governor.
And new governors get additional time. So, but this would be the latest budget we introduced if they give it March 5th, since at least 1979 was the last number that I saw from the Fiscal Bureau.
Okay, and falling, this is a very important story that I alluded to earlier. A federal judge has yesterday struck down the two-week limit on absentee ballots that was part of the that was enacted during the lame duck session.
Okay. So remember,
big deal, and it's a good call to make it a falling.
And remember, Republicans tried a couple 3 years ago, I think it was, to do something similar. They tried to limit early voting to less than 2 weeks, to limit the number of hours it could be offered, to say one polling place per community, and other restrictions. You couldn't do it on like Sundays or something like that too. That was struck down by Judge James Peterson, a federal judge out of Madison. This second go-around, they said, okay, we're going to keep roughly a two-week window. We're going to take away the restriction on the number of polling sites. You can have it whenever you want, as many hours as you want, number of days you want.
But we're going to put a two-week, two-week limit.
Peterson said, basically, it wasn't even a close call, that this is substantially similar to what he struck down before.
Right.
Now, the original order from Peterson from that 16 case, that is currently on appeal. The Seventh Circuit, they heard arguments, I think, 2 years ago. Haven't issued a ruling yet, so we don't know when that's going to come down. But this is, again, rebuffing Republicans on this attempt. And the arguments you hear are this. Republicans keep saying it's not fair that Madison and Milwaukee get to go for up to, you know, 3-4 weeks or more.
Because they have more resources, more staffers, more
whereas
clerks.
Our local community doesn't.
Yeah.
The only restriction right now with this injunction in place, one restriction in state law is that you cannot start voting until the ballots are ready, which is 46 days out from an election, something like that. So you can start the day after the ballots are ready, start having early voting. Republicans don't like that. They think it's not fair. Even terrain. Democrats will keep saying, well, look, just tell your clerks to offer it. You're restricting Madison, Milwaukee because they are democratically dominated. Those are the two driving communities for Democrats statewide right now. And they feel like there's a Republican attempt to undercut their advantage.
And just really quickly, this win with the Judge Peterson ruling was, who brought it? With one Wisconsin
Institute? One Wisconsin, now another organization brought it, yes.
Okay, let's take about a minute, a little bit more. Let's talk about next week. We have the Governor Evers offering his first State of the State speech at 7 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
You going to talk about health care, transportation? What do you think?
He talked about in the campaign three things: education, health care,
and transportation.
I would be stunned if those three things aren't mentioned.
Okay.
Right?
But
tone does he set?
Right. Is he going to say the state of the state is generally pretty good? Or is that going to, would that throw some praise to former Governor Walker?
This is the thing that I've talked to people about this past week, that Tony Evers needs a transition from candidate Evers to Governor Evers. And that doesn't seem like a big deal, but there are the lines used in the campaign trail about what's wrong.
Tone is very important. You're right.
Now you're the leader of the state. There are people watching to see as he kind of transition from focusing on those things he wants to fix to a more positive tone of like, this is what we're doing well. We can build upon that. I mean, I know it's a subtle thing, but it's a transition that a lot of candidates go through from that to the reality of this.
And we're going to be watching how Assembly Republicans greet him.
Yes.
Given some of the less than standing ovations Assembly Democrats gave Governor Walker. Okay, but in the Assembly could vote on the pre-existing conditions bill, on Tuesday.
Yep.
And potentially Marcy's Law. Is the Senate in session for anything significant?
Session in session on Tuesday. I think they're both thinking about rules packages. I have not seen a Senate calendar yet. We should get that before too long. But reality is there aren't many committees that have met so far. You know, we're only a couple weeks in.
That's very true.
There's not a lot of meat in the bone right now.
Okay. The beat and the news goes on. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for January 18.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.